This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, my cat-loving friends. We got a treasure today. Rita and I have been obsessed with Dr. Andy Rourke. If you do not follow him on social media, you are missing out. There is a lot of education and the occasional really bad dad joke, which we're hoping he'll at least leave us with one today. But, you know, entertainment and education go hand in hand. He's a veterinarian, an international speaker. He's an author and a media personality. He does all the stuff, and we are so excited. We'll be back right after this word from our sponsor.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to 19 Cats and Counting. I am your co-host, Linda Hall, here with the ever-gorgeous blonde bombshell, my BFF, Rita Reimers.
Oh, now she's buttering me up for something. I don't know what it is yet, but she'll catch
it. I'm stacking them in account for when I need them.
I got it.
But I don't even want to talk to you. I've been looking forward to
it. I don't want to talk to you
Andy.
Either. That's good.
Hi, Dr. Andy. Welcome aboard.
Hello there.
Can we call you Dr. Andy or Dr. Work?
Just call me Andy.
Okay. Andy it is. You worked really hard for that doctor.
I know.
It's a shame when people don't use it.
Well, I did. But I tell you what, you know, the thing that makes me the happiest in this job is connecting with people and making people feel like they can talk to you. And I just think that's so important. And honestly,
you're right.
If we're not in the exam room, I think that doctor word is kind of a barrier. But I just love talking to you guys. And please just call me Andy.
Yay. All right. You got it. Andy.
Oh, well, the same. We could talk about cats forever and ever. We love dogs, too. But we are just both more cat centric than dog centric. I grew up with a dog. Linda did too.
Yeah, I did too. I had one until last August, but cats are they're just my connection. They're my jam. They're my special thing. So we have a bunch of questions for you, but I want to start with something that really hit me. We recently lost someone in the cat rescue field who took her own life. And I did the research and cried because I found out that people in the animal care industry, including veterinarians, have the highest suicide rate equal only to firefighters and policemen.
That's awful.
Yeah. It's true.
And I don't remember it. X out of so many vets have considered. So, I mean, it was awful to read.
Yeah.
So, it's heartbreaking. So I know that you said at drandyrourke.com, which it's roar like Orion, like Orion, like a lion, R-O-A-R with a K on the end. Drandyrourke.com.
Linda, I know it's Friday, but get
it. It's Friday and I can't talk. And you had said something about wanting people to really connect and know what the other side of vet life is like. And I assume that stress is part of it. So give us a little bit about that. I know it's a lot.
Oh, sure. That's a big.
That's a heavy question to start
with.
That's a big cat toy to knock around. All right. Here. Vet medicine is a weird mixture of medicine and customer service and advocacy. And so it's the medicine part, you know, is fixing the problems. And the customer service part is dealing with the human who brings the cat carrier in. You know, who's ultimately going to make the decisions, and you have to be a good communicator and you have to build trust with that person and help them to understand because you can be the smartest clinician in the world, but if you can't explain that and the pet owner doesn't get it, they're not going to be able to go along with you and support you and make sure the pet gets the care they need.
That's true. I've had some great vets, but I also had one I had a knockdown drag out fight with because he screamed at me.
Oh no.
Putting down my cat or not. And I never went back to that office again. And I know he's a good vet, but if you don't have that rapport with someone.
Yeah, it's the relationship. So it's the you know, it's the clinician part, it's the customer service part, and it's the advocacy part, because, you know, we sort of speak for the voiceless. And again, you have to balance that with sort of the customer service part and the relationship part of this person is coming to you for a service. You know, they want you to do this for them, and they're maybe budget conscious or whatever. But you also want to advocate for that pet and say, hey, you know, Skittles would really benefit from this. And so you really kind of have to try to balance all those things. It can be challenging. It can be hard. I mean, from your work with, you know, with cat rescues and things, it can feel like a ceaseless task. You know, there's just a never ending stream of pets coming in and, you know, they're sick or they're struggling, and or their pet owners are sick or struggling and things like that. And it'd be a hard job. And with the customer service part, you know, we know how hard life has gotten for wait staff at restaurants, and, you know, and how mean people can sort of be. And I hate that. So I think as a society, we're seeing more of this kind of meanness. And I think that's really challenging for people who have big hearts.
You're right. I see people really abusing the staff at the veterinarian's office too, the people at the desk. You know, they've been waiting too long, or they're sick of sitting or whatever, or that, you know, they're complaining about their bill. You don't have to treat them like CRAP, you know. The next time you come in, you really think that person's going to treat you or give you any kind of, you know, side benefits or anything when you treat them like way.
It's a balance, you know, because you're right. Sometimes you say, you know, I shouldn't have to tolerate this. Or, you know, there's some people who come in and don't have any reason to be mean, but they are. But, you know, it's funny, what you run into a lot with vet medicine is this. And so, you know, when we have cats that we engage with, whether we're bringing them in the vet clinic or we're going into their home or whatever, and we get hissing or we get, you know, snarling, that's fear, you know? It's not meanness, it's fear. And people say, oh, she's such a mean cat. She's not a mean cat. She's afraid.
Yes. Bless you for saying that.
And, you know, I really try to remember that myself as a doctor, and or when we work with other doctors and sort of in doctor communication training and things. That's such a valuable thing to remember, because human beings are the same way. A lot of times there's people who are very angry, are very afraid. Or they feel great frustration at the unfairness of life. You know, when we have people and they come in, and I've got too many stories to list, but, you know, we'll have someone and they will find out horrible medical news about the cat that they love, and they get mad. And it's just, I know they're not mad at me. They're mad at the unfairness of life, but no one teaches you how to keep a perspective like that. And it can be hard sometimes. I think a lot of times we're a proxy for the unfairness of life, and just,
you're right,
you know, the hardships that people carry.
And it's hard, and I don't think people appreciate that. I mean, y'all are amazing at coming in and doing a euthanasia or something and walking out the door and going in the next room, and I'm thinking,
I don't know how you do it. I say that to my vet all the time. I don't know how you do it. Unfortunately, with this many cats, I see my vet for a lot of euthanasias. Yeah. Every time I'm like, I don't know how you do this.
So much of it is perspective. You know, with euthanasia, I will tell you, I see euthanasia generally as a gift. And I really do believe that. And that may also speak to part of the suicide rates in veterinary professionals. But you know, I believe that in these cases of these sick cats, and I'll see cats that come in with chronic renal failure, which is very common in older cats, and they'll weigh 5 pounds, and they used to weigh 10 pounds, and their skin and bones, and you know, and they're nauseous and they're not eating, and euthanasia is the kindest thing that I can do for them. And so I really do think that that's important. I think where a lot of vets struggle is when they don't feel that's true, you know, and those are particular hardships when we end up sort of in a position and someone wants to put their cat to sleep and you say, but this is a wonderful cat. What are we doing here? And then you kind of have to decide how you're going to handle that, and if you're just going to send the person away. And sometimes we do. All that stuff is challenging. But it's funny. It's, for me, it's not the euthanasias that are really hard, because I have gotten to know people so well. Like, Rita, you know, when you take your cat in and it's a senior cat and you know that it's time, that's probably you probably remember those veterinarians, I suspect. And hopefully you sort of remember the compassion that you saw with them, because that's, you know, it's a time that I think people can really connect. And it's a time, I will tell you, I get more thank you notes for euthanasia than anything else by far. And it's just because people need you at that time. You can find purpose in that. You have to have a good perspective, and you have to look at it the right way. But it really can be. I know that sounds maybe a bit odd, but, you know, I have.
No, it's good. I've had vets cry with me, and that means a lot when they get emotional, then, because I know that it's not just a routine thing that they do. They
exactly.
Really
feel. Yes. Yes, yes. You know, and it is a gift. You know, our last sanctuary cat that we had to put down, Missy, Norwegian forest cat. So she should be like 12 pounds. What was she, 5 pounds the last time she had thyroid issues?
It was
wasting away. She was screaming for food, but she wouldn't eat. I mean, it was not a good life for human or cat. And so, yeah, it was the kind of thing we could have done, but that doesn't make it any easier on the humans.
Oh, no, you're exactly right. You know, one of the changes that I've seen in vet medicine in about the last 10 years is there's a lot of different kinds of veterinary practice than there used to be. And it's really, I think the future is fragmentation. I think you're going to see veterinarians working with cat owners in a variety of ways you haven't seen before. But one of the fairly recent ones, I think, the last 10 years, we've really seen the rise in hospice care veterinarians, which are veterinarians whose entire job is coming and they do end of life care. They generally mobile, they come to people's homes so you don't have to go to the vet clinic and stuff. And again, that didn't exist more than about 10 years ago. And when you think about it first, you go, wow, what a terrible job to just put pets to sleep and be there at the end of their life. But I know so many of these veterans and they really love that job. They feel like they're really helping. They're coming to the families in their homes and they find reward and purpose in this work. So
I wish we had one here. I'm in a tiny little town.
Me too. I was a nurse's aide for hospice for many years. And when I first started and I said, oh my gosh, this is what God always wanted me to do. This is the best thing. After a while, it got my emotions and I was done and it was like time to move on. I wouldn't do that again if you paid me, but it was everything for a while there. And yes, I was providing comfort for these people and I was helping their last days be better and I was allowing them to stay in their home. That's a gift. That was everything to me until I just had too many deaths and couldn't do it because I get attached. But
I don't know. Not to change the subject, but I just want to ask, do you find that more cats have issues going to the vet than dogs? I mean, dogs always, they kind of seem happy when they're waiting in the waiting room and the cats are all hunkered in their carriers, you know?
No, I think you're exactly right. Now, you know, we've looked at this in the vet profession for years and years, and the truth is your regular small animal veterinarian, and again, this is not everyone, but just broad spectrum. I think the practices generally see something about 7 to 8 dogs out of 10 patients. And you say, but when you look at pet ownership, it's much more evenly split than that. It's about 50-50 even. But we just see such a huge number of dogs. And really one of the things that vet practices have struggled with is getting cats in for care for the exact reason that you mentioned. Dogs are often, not all dogs, but dogs are off. They're excited to get in the car. They come in and you give them some treats and they're, really working effectively with cat owners is a challenge because, you know, and we've all seen there's cats that they don't want to go in the carrier. They don't like, if they see you getting it out, they are gone. And then, the other thing is it's working with cats. It takes in different skills. And one of the things you try to hammer into vet professionals is cats are not small dogs.
Amen.
But you know, you can get your goofy dog out there and they'll hop around. And you just sort of grab them up and they're happy as a clam. That's not how our feline patients are. I think that they're, as much as I would like to say, well, you can just behave differently and they'll have an equal experience. I just think cats are much more secretive. They're much more solitary. They're much less excited to be in a new place.
Yeah, they hate that.
Where they've been. And again, there are things that we can do. And the best way to approach this is a partnership between the cat owner and the veterinary team, you know, to try to say, let's make this smooth. Let's, she spelled C-R-A-P. For goodness sakes, the cat shouldn't be in the waiting room with a barking dog next to their carrier. Like we got to do better than that. And I understand we're working. Sometimes we have the space that we have and things like that, but really it's on the veterinarians and the vet professionals. So we've got to handle this. We've got to try to reduce the stress for our feline patients coming in. We can do that with scheduling. We should be communicating. I'm really getting big guys on anti-anxiety approaches to prepare cats to come into the vet clinic. I know you, with your interest in cat behavior and things, there's so many things that we can do to set the table for a good vet visit at home that just, it stops them from being so, I hate to say traumatized, but so nervous, so stressed.
Oh, it is.
Well, it is trauma. Yeah. I had one vet and all the vets I've seen, because I've moved all over the place in LA, and he had a separate entrance and a separate waiting room for cats and dogs. And that was awesome.
Yeah, I love to see it. I think you're seeing more of that. You're seeing that some other practices at least divide the waiting room. So the dogs are on this side down here and cats are over. It's not perfect. The separate entrances is really, that's the gold standard. That's really what you want. But again, if you're in New York City, you're in Manhattan, you've got this tiny little space. It's hard to do things like that. We have to be creative. You can even do things like really focusing on taking cats directly. And as soon as they arrive at the practice, they go straight through the waiting room. Into the exam room where they can sort of acclimate. They're going to be in the room that they're going to be seen in, things like that. But it just takes a little bit of planning.
Yes, definitely. Exactly. And that's, you know, we have a lot of clients that if the cat is super, super spicy, they get a little gabapentin before they go. My daughter's cat, Tiger, is 20 and he is crabby. Oh my gosh, he's crabby. And she took him, he had to get shots. And he kept smacking the needle out of the poor vet tech's hands. And they went through like two or three vet techs. And then, you know, some old school vet tech who's been doing this a while walked in the room and she did it all so fast. None of us knew what was happening. She went, yo, yo. And it was like, oh, and she got him. And everybody else was like, what just happened?
Now, favorite story about Tiger is when they were trying to move.
Yeah, my daughter was moving apartments and we had some nice big burly guys back at the old apartment moving stuff. And we were unpacking in the new place and we got a phone call that said, we cannot move the bed. The cat won't let us. These guys were petrified of this orange cat. But I get it. He's mean.
I honestly lost track because I've been so enthralled with what you've been saying, Dr. Andy. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back for more after our sponsor.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your Cat Tree Tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. CATTREETRAY.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 cats and counting and Dr. Andy. I just can't call you Andy because, like Linda said earlier, you work so hard for that.
She's feeling disrespectful. Exactly. So, yes. So what is the one thing that you wish above all, if I could tell every cat parent or maybe pet parent, period, but cats can be so specific. This is the one thing that they just don't get that drives me crazy. Or maybe there's more than one.
There's a couple. I guess it all sort of comes back to, honestly, it's about stress management in our cats. That's really what it is. They're not spicy. They're not mean. They're not spiteful. That was what I was going for. They're not spiteful. They're anxious creatures.
Thank you for saying they're not spiteful, because a lot of people say they are. They're not.
Again, it goes back to fear. It goes back to, honestly, it's generally environmental stress. It's taking some time to do a little reading, get a little education on your environment. And especially multi-cat households, there's just, these things seem maybe arbitrary to us, but they're not. The number of litter trays. And you say, but I always keep it clean. And I say, I totally believe you. And I totally understand. Again, it's the interpersonal dynamics and associations. But the big thing I would say is, you know, especially now I'm thinking this through and you push me for one thing. The one thing I would say is if your cat starts to urinate inappropriately, don't sit around and wait on that. Because that's the number one thing. Honestly, that's the number one reason that cats live in shelters is inappropriate urination. Yes. And once these behaviors sort of become established, they're much harder to fix than if you just said something up front and said, hey, I'm just going to call the vet real quick. Please call me. Like, please let me know about that. Because oftentimes when we start to see inappropriate urination, there's something going on. It is a stress component. It is about interactions with the other cats. It's about where the litter boxes are placed. It's about how we're doing food.
That's about outdoor cats hanging around your
exactly
house.
Exactly right. It's just a great example. Outdoor cats are taunting us through the windows, but it could be any of those things. But it's not spite. It's not meanness. It's not revenge for other things. But a lot of times, if we can just intervene early before these things become patterns, we can really make a big difference. And it doesn't have to be a huge ordeal. We just have to take action and not.
Now, do you know how many people call us and say their cats have been peeing for like 2-3 years outside the box?
Yes. And they call me and they're at the end of the rope. They're like, I can't take this anymore. And I'm going, we can do this, but it's probably going to take, it took us time to get here. It's going to take us time to get back. I really wish you'd call me before you were totally done.
We tell people, you know, we had a client not long ago that I did a pre-consult with, and the cat's peeing outside the box. And I said, has your cat been vet checked? And she said, no. And I said, okay, I'm going to take down all your information and I'm going to save it, but we're not going to make you this appointment until you've had a vet clearance. Because if your cat has a UTI or interstitial cystitis, there's nothing I can do to help. Well, I could bring down the stress level for interstitial cystitis. I hate that word. But I know. But, you know, and then I tell them, look, if there is a UTI and they clear it up and it's still happening, don't freak out. It's become a habit. Now you want to call me. Yep. Now you want to book that appointment.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Andy. Mm-hmm. Why do vets always prescribe Dalawhite and Prozac for cats peeing outside of the box? We hear that time and time again.
Sure. So not to every pet is different, obviously. Now, I will tell you, I like Feel Away. The reason that we have Feel Away, so Feel Away is a pheromone. There's really good science behind it. And I will tell you that, like, it is well made. There is good science and documentation behind it that actually works. And it's used through a diffuser, like the Glade plug-in.
Right.
No.
Right.
So the nice thing is, there's research behind it. You don't have to give it to the cat. You know, it's not a pill. It's not, you literally plug it in. And especially it tends to work in small spaces. If you're in an apartment or something like that, this can be really good. So it's got good data behind it. And usually if we can get pet owners to take it home, the uptake, the compliance is usually really high. They just plug it in and then just forget about it. And it can have that benefit. And the last part, it goes back to that stress component we were talking about before, is so often your interstitial cystitis, that often comes from, that's often the stress component, things like that, the inner cat aggression stress component, stuff like that. So the idea that we can do this and it lasts and pet owners don't have to actively apply it, I think that's the big reason we see Feel Away. The other thing I would say too, when we were talking earlier about things we can do to have better visits coming into the vet, the Feel Away, they make it as a spray as well. And again, boy, dousing the towel in the cat carrier, things like that. Again, the research shows that we can bring stress down here. So Feel Away, that's why I think they go to is mostly ease of application. I have to go back and forth. Here's the truth about behavior. And I know you guys, it took me a long time to realize this in my career. Let me tell you something I was wrong about for a lot of my career. I really, when I would see behavioral problems in cats or in dogs, I really leaned hard into training. And I really wanted to lean into training. And I didn't want to put dogs or cats on any sort of anti-anxiety medication until the training didn't work. And now what I've come to believe is that's a flawed approach, because what happens is if I have a cat or I have a dog and I do something to reduce their anxiety and then go hard on training when their anxiety level has been reduced.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I'm often much easier to fix that problem. And then I can get them back off that anti-anxiety medication and everything's done. What I messed up earlier on, guys, and you know, if you practice it, you learn some things the hard way.
Live and learn.
Yeah. What I learned was I would have a cat owner who would come and they would say, she's having these problems with the litter box and things. And I would say, we're going to work on environmental control. We're going to work on some training and things like that. And then we would make some headway, but not enough. And then they would just kind of get, they would go, I guess this is how it's going to be. Or they would just get so frustrated. And then I would sort of kind of throw drugs at the situation of like, well, let's try to reduce their anxiety. But their enthusiasm, they'd already tried the training. They didn't really believe in it anymore. Would have been better off to push that anti-anxiety therapy and then lay the training on top of it with the idea that, guys, we're going to do this. My hope is that we will, once you get the training down, often you can come back off that anti-anxiety med.
But is Prozac always the choice, though? Because it takes so long to titrate up to find out, oh, it's not doing.
I think that's our concern. I wish more vets would work in tandem with behaviorists because, you know, we had a client today. The sole problem is she's got cats outside. That's the sole problem. We can tell you how to safely keep the cats back. Meanwhile, we're waiting 8 weeks for the Prozac to fully titrate up. I'm like, this cat is not having a chemical imbalance, a depression. This cat there are cats that have anxiety issues. We've had them and we're like, okay, this cat needs meds. Go talk to your vet, because every time they drop a fork, the cat attacks them. But the majority of them are temporary situations, like introducing another cat or something, that we can get around it.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think the choice for Prozac generally comes down to a big part of its cost. It's super generic.
Okay. That makes sense.
I mean, a big part of its cost. You can lean into your other anti-anxiety medications, but very quickly, without, you know, without medical insurance, you're gonna get up there pretty quickly. So Prozac is generic. It's available. The other thing is that we can get Prozac compounded, and a lot of times cats do well with liquids, and you know, we pay attention to what can we get consistently too. There's I don't know if you guys ever had the experience with feline medication. So a lot of times we want to get them compounded, which means we get a pill, we get it sort of turned into a gel, something like that. That's much easier to give the cat. But these things, it's amazing to me how often you'll find a pharmacy that will supply it, but then they don't supply it anymore, or they're out of it, or it's going to be a while they get more. And then you just become this sort of, you're chasing around. And so anyway, getting something that works consistently, that you can lay your hands on it, I think that those are big parts to it. You're exactly right about the titrate up. You know, oftentimes, especially I encourage people, if you're going through this and you're working with your behaviors, you're working with your trainer, and we're starting something like Prozac or things like that, and we're still not getting what we need, and we're waiting to titrate up and waiting to titrate up. Oftentimes there's things that we can add in the short term. Like for example, the gabapentin that we're
talking about. Like GABA. Yeah. We love GABA.
We're big fans of GABA.
We can use that while we bring up our other long-term medication, something like that. You know, so anyway, there's always things we can work on. But Rita, I hope I answered your question there about sort of feel away and Prozac. We're speaking in broad generalities. That's generally kind of what we're...
Yeah, and that's another thing that always shocks me. People, the vet put him on a med. Did it work? I don't know. I can't get him to eat it. You know, that comes in a transdermal gel and you can smear it in their ear. I'm sorry. Unless there's a reason not to, I think all cats should immediately be prescribed transdermal gels. Quit giving us pills. It's not working.
Yeah. The transdermal gels have made such a big difference, and they're really a godsend. You know, so methimazole, the hyperthyroid medication.
Oh yes.
I mean, and you've got these little old cats. You know what I mean? That you can sort of fortunately wipe things in their ear. You know, the downside to transdermals is just the dosing is a little less precise. You know what I mean? Because it's kind of you. How do you measure goo? You know, a little
bit.
Yeah,
true.
You can kind of do it, but there's that. And the other part is just, it's funny, cats with tiny ears and things like that, I've seen them have goo just kind of building up in there. And again, that's a rare case. Generally, it works very well, but those transdermal medications, I'm with you. But if you don't ask, if you don't say to your vet, hey, I'm not able to get this medication, and oftentimes they won't give you an alternative. I had a patient just yesterday, And they had it's a tooth root abscess. And so they had an abscess, you know, in their mouth. And it was important. We need to get them on some antibiotics because we need to resolve that infection. And then also pain control, of course, because boy, if you ever had some sort of dental problem, it hurts. And so I'd kind of gone through and this is a patient that was doing totally well and everything. And I wanted to send them home with pain medication. So I sent them home and as soon as we started to leave, they were like, hey, he's not going to take these pills.
Like, bad chance.
But good. I'm glad you said something before you left, because we can totally do an injectable, you know, version of this to get started. And sure enough, you get the pain down and then you can give them pills.
Right.
But if you have a way to reduce the pain, then you can't.
I'm cranky. I've been that when I'm sick. Everybody leaves me alone when I'm ill or in pain because they know I'm a jerk.
Could you imagine someone grabbing your face and trying to stick a pill down your throat?
I'd probably bite them.
Oh, absolutely. Totally understandable response.
I want to make sure we talk a little bit about your podcast, The Cone of Shame. And the fact, I was just telling Linda, there's an episode I want to make sure I listen to. Medical conditions masquerading as behavior.
Oh, you need to be on that episode. So I have a boarded veterinary behaviorist, and we're talking about medical conditions masquerading as behavior conditions, which honestly, guys, it was right on what we were talking about earlier, which is you've got a cat and they're peeing outside the litter box and people say, well, it's behavior, it's behavior. Well, what if it's not? What if it's early onset diabetes? What if we've got glucose in our urine? What if it's, and people don't think of things like this, what if it's an orthopedic issue? What if we have arthritis and getting into the litter box is painful or harder than it used to be?
Yes,
those are just things that people don't think about. And so going down the path of straight into training, it can be a mistake, because if there's a medical cause of driving it, you're not going to train your way out of it. And then also that time is going by, this behavior is becoming, you know, set in. But, ooh, I decided I like peeing.
Yeah, over it becomes a habit then.
This is a nice place to go. Exactly. I just did a social media post yesterday or the day before about those stupid top loading litter boxes.
Hate those.
And I'm like, if your cat is 12 years old, I'm about guarantee you, I'm going to put the money on the fact that this cat has arthritis. And now it's got to launch itself up and out of this hole. Are you kidding me right now?
My favorite litter boxes are the big sweater boxes you get at Target. You know, they're low. They're like maybe 3 inches or so.
We love those.
And they're broad, so they're low and wide. And so again, I understand people may not have space for them in the apartment or something. But if you can, those, I really like those open low litter boxes. My least favorite are the ones that are tall, and also the ones that are covered, because again, cats don't like to go into these.
No, they don't.
They only have one entrance and exit. They feel trapped. Especially if you've got, you know, a lot of times people will use those because they have dogs, and the idea is that they'll keep the dogs out.
Yeah, so the dogs don't have a snack.
Exactly right. And again, I totally get it. But you create a place where there's only one entrance and exit, and the dog is going to trap you in there, and it's just things like that. So anyway, the podcast is called The Cone of Shame. It is a podcast about life in veterinary medicine. And so I do episodes called How Do You Treat That, which is what, you know, we were just talking about. And I tried to make it, I really made it for veterinarians, but I wanted to make it for our vet nurses and other people in the hospital. But what I really tried to do is make it mimic the conversation that veterinarians have in the doctor's office. When I come in and I say, hey, you know, I'm looking at this cat that has come in for inappropriate urination, and I put the ultrasound on her abdomen and her bladder is just totally empty. I can't get a urine sample. I don't want to start this cat on antibiotics because oftentimes these are not urinary tract infections, and I want to be a good steward, but also I don't have a sample. Hey, other doctor, how do you treat this? What do you do with these? And then we have that conversation there, and I bring it to the best specialists in the world. And just to ask them, the pearls that they scatter are amazing. And then, you know, you always lifelong learning, you know, always trying to get better. And then the other one, I talk a lot about our industry. I mean, I think vet medicine as an industry is fascinating. We talked a bit about the mental health stuff earlier. The corporate consolidation is really interesting. You know, I don't know if people know, but we've gone through a period in the last 5 or 6 years where these companies, and some of them mega companies, they're just buying up so many.
We've noticed that. Yes.
Yeah. It's just the industry is radically changing. We're at somewhere around 40% of the hospitals are owned by corporate groups. And it used to be none.
They used to be all independently owned.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but I still think that I think you're going to have independent locally owned veterinarians. I think that there's going to be
one vet here.
You have one vet.
One vet town.
Small town.
Well,
yes,
one
exactly.
Office, I should say. I think there's 6 vets in there.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that you're educating other veterinarians, because like I said, you know, we get our burrs up our butt every once in a while, because so often somebody brings the cat in and says, my cat's being outside the box, or my cat's aggressive, and they're stuck out and they're feel away and get Prozac. And that's where they end the conversation.
Period.
We need to get the anxiety down to work with them.
Yeah.
But then we need to work with them and the understanding. We had a client one day who was very angry with his cat, and he was this close to rehoming. I hate it when they write that on their form. If this doesn't work, I'm going to rehome them. He was going away for a weekend every month for work, and every time he came back, the cat had pooped on his pillow, which of course means that the cat was mad at him for leaving and punished him by pooping on his pillow. And I'm like, no, baby, your cat missed you so much that he went to the biggest scent soaker in your home, your bed, and he mixed his scent with yours to comfort himself while you're
That's
gone.
Right.
And I wanted to say, and you want to give him away, but I didn't say the last part.
But he didn't give him away because we helped.
He didn't give him away. But yeah, and I hope he's not listening. But you know, it's understanding. There's no bully cats, no spiteful cats. They're not holding revenge. None of that crap exists.
Well, the one that really gets me is the jealousy. Cats, they're not they don't have the complex emotions like we have. They don't have jealousy. They have resource guarding and wanting to keep things to themselves, but it's not jealousy.
Yeah. Well, that marriage between medicine and training is just so important. And it's, and you know, it's, I don't want to liken it too much to human mental health, you know, but, I think our human doctors have, they get a bit of a habit of writing a prescription and disappearing, you know what I mean? And again, I understand everybody's busy and we're all, you know, we're all trying to get through the day and get everything done. In behavior cases, they take conversation and follow up and things like that. But I just, that's why I think you guys are doing such a service. And I love Thank that you are there for people and that you put in the time, especially with this podcast. It's that education, but it's supporting people on an ongoing basis, talking about doing the work in the home. And so I just putting that together with, you know, sort of the medical component and make sure our bases are covered and we get support from veterinarians that we need. I think that marriage is really important.
I'd like to see veterinarians and cat behaviorists and dog behaviorists work more together.
Exactly.
And I think that would really be beneficial to everyone.
Our first statement anytime there's a behavior issue is, have you been to the vet? You need to go to the vet. I want a clearance before I'm going to talk to you.
I hate that we have to wrap this up. We've actually gone a little bit over. Andy, would you come back again?
Of course. I would be thrilled to come back. I've so enjoyed being here.
Yay!
You're just up the road
you.
From me. I think you're still in Georgia.
Greenville, South Carolina.
You're in Greenville. Oh. I lived in Greenville a long time ago for about
you're
5 years.
You're very close.
Or so.
I thought you were in Georgia. Yeah. So I'm in Lancaster, I'm sorry, South but Carolina. Not far. I have to request a bad dad joke before we go. I know we're over, okay, but we have to.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. There's oh boy. I
put him on the spot.
I'll tell you about when if I had to write ophthalmology jokes or dermatology jokes, I would always write ophthalmology jokes. Do you know why? Because the punchlines are always cornea. I didn't say it was a good joke.
That was good. That's what I asked for.
Sounds like something your husband would say.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, exactly. What was the dog's favorite breakfast? What was it? Pooch? No, it was one you did. It's your joke, Andy.
He's done a million.
I don't remember now.
I don't even. I come up with jokes and make myself laugh, and then I just like put them on social media.
Exactly.
And it's like I see my own stuff from a couple years ago, and I crack myself up. I'm like,
Please come back again when we can talk about even more. We love what you do, and keep on doing it.
Thanks, guys.
And of course, I have to thank Linda for always being by my side, my ride or die. And Mark Winter for giving us this wonderful opportunity on Pet Life Radio. Just remember, every day is Catter Day. And we'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.